listener, welcome to the University of Maryland Extension Presents the Garden Time Podcast, where we talk about getting down and dirty in your garden. We're your hosts. I'm Rachel.
I'm Michaela.
And I'm Emily.
In this month's episode, we're playing a gardening trivia game with Stephanie and Caitlin with the statewide Maryland Master Gardener program.
We're really excited to have you guys join us, and we've been dying to do a trivia podcast for, oh my gosh, years.
I think
maybe.
Since the summer.
We've been planning it for a while. We're very honored that we got to be the hosts and figure out the questions for you guys. And it is tough, let me tell you.
Yeah, I think we're going to be in for it. So what are the ground rules, everybody?
So we've got four different categories, and the categories are botany, soils, entomology, and native/invasives. Each question is worth 1 point. There's three questions within each category, and we'll give you about 10 to 15 seconds to come up with your answer. And listeners, those of you that are listening along with us, please feel free to come up with your own answers to the questions as well. And you'll write your answers down, show it to us, and we'll give you a point if you get it right. And then at the end, there's going to be a bonus question just in case we need a tiebreaker or anything.
Stakes are high.
The stakes are very high. Yep, it's going to be great.
Awesome. Well, I think we're excited to play.
Yeah. Can't wait. Okay. All right, so the first question is going to be with our botany category. The question is, which plant takes its name from the Italian phrase for beautiful woman?
I have a clarifying question.
Yes.
Is this a genus name?
That's a good question. You can do either the genus or the common name.
Okay.
I didn't know we narrowed it down.
I know. I see you were trying to be tricky. Okay. All right, let's see. Emily, we'll start with you.
So I think it's roses.
Dang it.
Rachel.
I did too.
All right.
Narcissus.
Okay, well, the good news is that you're all wrong.
Dang it.
I thought that too.
Narcissus. But I thought maybe that was like self-indulgent.
I can't remember.
Okay, dang
it. No, legit guesses for sure. Mm-hmm. They're a little bit harder than that. So next time, think more. All right, so the answer is belladonna. Fun facts, obviously, for every answer, so we can all learn together. This is, after all, an educational show. Great.
Okay.
So, it's Atropa belladonna is the scientific name, and the original meaning of the name comes from Venetian ladies of the court who used to use drops of the plant to dilate their pupils because they thought that that made them more beautiful.
Oh my
they
goodness.
Had dilated pupils. However, all parts of this plant are toxic, so it's not something you want to be involving yourself in. You can get dermatitis and absorb the toxins just if you touch it. But if you're poisoned by it by ingesting it, symptoms can include rapid heartbeat, dilated pupils, delirium, vomiting, hallucinations, and eventually death due to respiratory failure. So we definitely want to stay away from this one. However, ophthalmologists still use some of the toxins, like atropine, to dilate their patients' pupils before eye exams and surgery, and also various forms of it are still used in lotions or salves, and they can help relieve pain from sciatica, gout, or cardiac palpitations.
Huh. That's crazy.
That's awesome.
Yeah. it makes me think about, like, what measures we go through right now that in many years' time they're going to be like, yeah, it has all these other side effects, but we did it because we wanted to look good. I know there's a ton. I'm sure there's a ton.
I sort of love that they're like, you know what's really hot? Dilate a pupil.
All right, this one. I think you guys will be okay with, though. Our second question. Apples, pears, plums, apricots, and peaches are members of what family of flowering plants? So we're looking for the family name here.
I think I remember this.
I don't at all. This is why I always said don't grow fruit trees in Maryland.
I hope I got this right.
No, I don't think I do, actually.
None of us get it right.
All right.
We're so used to Google.
Yeah,
you know, like,
true.
We become so reliant. Okay.
All right, let's see it. Michaela, Achilles star at this time is ACA. I say stone.
Stone.
Fruit.
I
say
stone fruit, which I think is Prius.
Stone fruit. Okay, so Michaela is correct.
Yeah.
All right, so there's about 3,000 different species in this family, and some of the other familiar members that you might recognize are strawberries, raspberries, almonds, and, of course, roses.
Lovely.
So fun getting that wrong.
When you had it right the first time.
Yeah.
Did you?
Oh, no,
I'm
glad you
said stone fruit.
So, like, that...
Close.
Yeah.
Not close enough to give us a point, though.
Indeed, no.
Not close
no.
enough.
Indeed, no.
But I think it's weird to think of something as roses and apples as
right.
being related. Like, we all think
yeah.
of them
yeah.
as plants, but to think that, like, they're more closely related than you would think of, like, apples and oaks. Like, I would
yeah.
typically you'd be like, oh, it's an apple tree. It's a tree. It's closer to these. But to be like, no, but it's more close
no.
to this
Not
shrubbery.
The botanists have spoken.
The botanists want you to bring up some shrubbery.
So, question
okay.
number three. This is the last botany question.
Okay.
These flowers were once so valuable that their bulbs were worth more than gold.
Ooh.
Oh, Rachel's feeling very confident on this one.
I am. I'm probably going to be wrong.
Right.
All right, so okay. Rachel, we'll start with you this time, especially since you were so confident in your answer.
I'm not confident.
Let's see it.
Tulips.
And
I also said tulips.
Yes!
Oh,
nice.
We're on the board. Everybody's on the board.
Point.
All right, so tulips are actually descendants of wildflowers that were native to Central Asia, and then they came to Turkey. And in the late 1500s is when they came to Europe by way of a gift to a botanist at a university in the Netherlands. There are about 3,500 named varieties of tulips. And they are also the symbol for love, passion, perfect lovers, and romance, which is perhaps why they are the second most popularly gifted flower on Valentine's Day after roses. I'm sensing a theme here.
Yeah. And you know what? We've already decided live plants, the whole tulip, the bulb,
mm-hmm.
the flower,
yeah.
that's more worthwhile than just getting the cut flowers. Although we
100%.
Do.
100%. Yeah.
Like both. But
yeah.
yeah.
I mean, I'd like, much rather have something that lasts year than.
Right.
That I can't kill.
Can't put in the ground.
I still
well,
kill mine.
I was going to say, that doesn't mean anything to me. I can still kill it. I can still kill it.
All right, so after our first botany category, Michaela is in the lead with two. Rachel and Emily each have one. So everyone's got something. We love
okay.
it. All right,
we
we're going to toss it to Caitlin for the soils category.
Alrighty.
What word is used to describe plants that like acidic soil and will not grow in alkaline soils?
Oh,
I'm not sure about the spelling, so you know.
That's okay. I think our ref has determined that
spelling
does not count.
No, we don't do that.
It's the thought that counts. All right. Who wants to?
I think Emily has yet to.
Yes.
I just have acid loving plants. I don't know what the term is.
Okay. I said acidophiles.
Okay.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. I put ericaceous.
Woo-hoo.
Ericaceous is correct.
Oh,
I would argue that that's a botany question more than a soil question.
I was trying to struggle with what
that's a
soil question would be.
Yeah.
So there are fun facts.
Caitlin, that was the perfect answer. I just want you to know.
Yeah. No hate against Caitlin. I appreciate you guys doing this.
That's right.
So, fun facts. Camellias, blueberries, and rhododendron are all examples of plants that like ericaceous soils. Adding a finely ground sulfur additive to the soil can lower pH, making the soil more acidic.
Just in case you wanted to try those blueberries.
Well,
yes.
Yeah.
Okay. What are the four types of soil?
Is this the texture?
Yes.
Yes, it would be, yeah, soil texture.
Yes.
My bad.
This is where I want to be like, Emily, is this right?
This is where I was.
Can we just, like, as a team? Can we ask this, you guys maybe instead?
You see Michaela hard with that because she is winning.
She's winning for now.
She won the prize.
I'm really scared.
I'm going to feel really bad if I can't pass the entomology.
Well, it doesn't matter. It's all supposed to be fun.
Yeah.
Okay. Do we all have answers?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Rachel, you go first. Mm-hmm.
Okay, sand, silt, clay, humus, or loam? I couldn't say.
Mm-hmm. I said sand, loam, clay, and silt.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Oh, shoot.
Clay is loam, sand, organic.
Nice. All right, actually, Emily and Rachel are correct.
Yes.
Oh, yay!
You are catching up.
Okay.
So which type of soil you have determines what will grow well. All of them have advantages and disadvantages. Clay soil contains fine particles and becomes sticky when wet. Sandy soil contains an even amount of both rock and mineral particles. Silty soil is very slippery and contains few rock pieces. Loams are mixtures of clay, sand, and silt that avoid the extremes of each type.
For a side question from us to you guys,
okay.
When should people perform soil tests? Before you plant.
Before you plant at any time your soil isn't frozen.
Yay! We say anytime is a good time to get a soil test, as long as your ground is not sopping wet or frozen.
All right, last soil question.
Oh, my God.
Sorry. Which soil horizon do most plant roots grow in?
This one takes me back to high school. Learning all the soil horizons.
Okay, Michaela, go first.
All right. Horizon A?
Oh, I said organic matter, and then I thought or A.
I said A.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that is correct. A.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Also known as topsoil.
I almost put O in, though.
Yeah.
So this is the horizon found underneath the O layer with organic matter. Most of the organic matter in soil is contained in this layer. This layer also has the most nutrients and biological activity, so insects, earthworms, centipedes, bacteria, fungi, and other animals are found inside this layer. There's a lot happening in soil.
Yeah. And there's a lot of different types of soils where they'll have... Some will have horizons that others don't.
Yeah.
So it makes them all diverse.
It does. Because I think the one under this is like the E layer, because it's like...
Right, the leech layer.
Yeah,
yes.
The leech layer, and then it's like the this, and it's this. And
some
like,
have B, but some don't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Soils are weird
are
and
weird.
Complicated and amazing.
They are amazing.
Yes,
yeah.
So important.
They are.
So now we're in entomology, right?
Yeah, moving on to entomology indeed.
Okay.
All right, so the first question is, what is the world's loudest insect?
Emily, you should know this.
Do you know this?
Oh, fun, we did it. We stumped our entomologists. I love that. All right, Rachel, you go first.
Click beetle.
Click beetle. Oh, that's cute. I love them.
Cicada?
Oh, that's a good one.
I just thought it was a type of beetle.
Okay, I think we're going to need a referee judgment here. So the answer is actually an African cicada.
Oh.
The Revisana brevis. Do we give her the point?
Give her the point.
Yeah. All right.
Just saying, I didn't say.
All right, there you go.
Just saying, you didn't specify what kind of cicada.
Although I was thinking more in terms of as a collective group.
That's
the loudest.
That's
right?
Fair.
Like,
yeah.
That
is
but
true.
I,
yes.
I don't know.
So the loudest song for these cicadas can be 107 decibels when you're about 2 feet away, and in case you were wondering, that's almost as loud as a chainsaw, which comes in at 110 decibels.
Ouch.
So it's very loud.
Yeah.
And even though it's too loud for us, it's very important for the cicadas in terms of their communication amongst their species. So we're going to let them sing their song.
I was going to say, can you imagine
you
if...
You will.
Can you imagine if that was our mating ritual? You just yell at somebody
really hard.
Hey! As you say, it's a very aggressive cat call.
It would not fly for us, but
no.
Cicadas, it must work.
So. Yeah.
That guy can yell really loud.
I mean...
It's hot.
You know,
it's hot.
All right. So, what percentage of all the species in the world are insects? I'm thinking of your Master Gardener basic training presentation.
Do you have that in your presentation?
Given as a percentage?
It should be your fun fact.
That's correct. Yeah. Right. So if nothing else, you at least just have some of
this.
Yeah.
Animal
mass?
This is going to be really embarrassing because I'm going to get every single one of these biology ones wrong.
Dang, I feel like I'm...
No,
okay,
I don't think it's mass. I think it's type of species. Number of species.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yes, number of species.
Ooh.
When thinking of like
in the
animal kingdom.
Animal kingdom.
Percentage.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna
stick with my answer.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
I like guessing.
All right. So let's go with Emily first this time.
60%.
All right.
I want
Rachel.
Go big or go home.
90%. 85%. Okay. So that's actually. You guys are closest. It's 80%.
Oh, see?
Yep, very good.
That's what I had down originally, and I changed it.
I was going with your gut, girl. All right, so there's about 900,000 different insect species, and about one-third of those are beetles.
Yep.
So the beetles are out here. Also, this is a really fun fact. There's approximately 1.4 billion insects for every person on the earth, and the total weight of all the insects is about 70 times more than the total weight of all people.
Oh my goodness.
Oh. And this is why we like bugs, people.
Yeah. Absolutely, this is why.
So do I get a point for being the closest?
I'm wheeling my way. What's the call?
No.
Because it's very hard to get an exact number, I'm just saying.
It is, but you were right the first time.
I should have left it. Doubted myself. All right,
question number three. This is the last question in entomology. What is the food of honeybee queens?
Emily should know this.
Do you want all of them?
Or it's one?
Okay.
One specific.
Do you want
thing.
The one specific one that they get that no one else gets?
Yes.
Basically.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea.
All right. Time's up, so
I'm
I think it's Michaela's turn to go.
Okay.
First.
I said royal jelly.
Awesome.
I said nothing.
Seriously?
I said nothing because all I could think about was their, like,
I was thinking
hierarchy.
Bread, but I knew that wasn't.
I could just think about their hierarchy system and all the conversations that we have about bees being, like, Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's
I think we
could
determine termites were more Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah,
right.
Yes, it was termites.
Yeah. All right, so Emily and Michaela are correct.
Of course you are.
All right, so royal jelly is a sweet, protein-rich secretion exuded from the hypopharyngeal glands of worker bees, and it's given to the queen larvae by the nurse bees. However, all the larvae get to feed on it for the first 3 days that they are born. But then after the first 3 days, only those larvae that are designated to become queens will continue to receive the royal jelly exclusively from the nurse bees, and the rest of the larvae switch to worker jelly and become sterile worker bees.
How do they determine which ones are going to be the queens and which ones are going to be the worker jelly?
Emily?
The size of their cells?
Yeah.
Supersedure cells and like emergency queen cells that are
yeah.
in different locations.
Because she typically has a larger cell, so then they probably determine that prior.
Makes sense.
It's a very complex society.
It is. It's very Game of Thrones society, right?
So the royal jelly is very rich in proteins, lipids, amino acids, also vitamins and minerals. So you can also find it used in a lot of your common skincare, lotions, makeup, and other beauty products. It's really good for our skin as well.
Because we're queens.
Yes. All right, so Michaela has 6 points.
Of course she does.
Rachel's not competitive.
Emily has 4 points, and Rachel has 2 points.
Yeah.
Like, still time.
This.
There's still time.
There's the last round.
Yeah.
So we are on invasives and natives.
Okay.
Lord.
Okay.
Is it Palmer amethyst? As long as it's Palmer amethyst, I know.
I did not put that one.
Palmer amaranth.
Do we we have what is Michaela's favorite grass?
Yes.
Because
I got that
question.
Okay. Which plant invader, if touched, causes a serious chemical reaction which makes skin hypersensitive to ultraviolet light?
Rachel, being
you
very thoughtful
like,
about this.
You look confident.
I don't. I'm not.
Okay. She looks so
it's
serene
all
though. She's very like.
She's like very placidly thinking about her answer.
Right.
For someone who's losing.
Okay.
She's serene.
It's all the caffeine.
Michaela, you looked confident. What's your answer?
Well, I think, I hope. But there's a lot of plants that can cause reactions. But I,
good
when you said UV rays, I thought it might be giant hobby.
Okay.
Okay.
That's what I've said.
Nice.
I said poison ivy. It is giant hogweed.
I would have said, if they hadn't said anything else about UV rays, I was going to say poison ivy. But
okay.
Fair.
So, brushing against or breaking the plant releases sap that, combined with sunlight and moisture, can cause a severe burn within 24 to 48 hours. It's federally listed as a noxious weed. If you do touch it, consult a physician, but also wash the affected area thoroughly with soap and cold water as soon as possible and keep the exposed area covered or away from sunlight for 48 hours. It's mostly found in the Northeast, but has been reported in Maryland. But it is uncommon here.
And it is huge.
It's giant.
Yes. I think we talked about it in one of our Halloween episodes.
Yes, we did.
We probably did.
I know I definitely talked about poison hemlock, which was going to be my other guess. But
there's too many poisonous plants.
There's too many poisonous plants. There's a lot.
Yes.
Yeah, it's quite a few. All right.
Okay.
All right. By the 1950s, this plant invader had earned the nickname the vine that ate the South.
Oh. Whoa, I think Rachel might have got another one. I think we might have found her category.
She's familiar. She's familiar.
All right, do we all have answers?
Mm-hmm.
We do. Okay. Mm-hmm. Emily, you go first.
So I think it's kudzu or mile a minute.
Also kudzu.
Yes, kudzu is correct.
So this was first introduced to the United States during the Philadelphia Centennial Exposition in 1876. Touted as a great ornamental plant for its sweet-smelling blooms and sturdy vines. From the 1930s through the 50s, the Soil Conservation Service promoted it as a great tool for soil erosion control, so it was planted in abundance throughout the South. As so many plants were planted for soil erosion control. So once it's established, kudzu grows at a rate of 1 foot per day with mature vines as long as 100 feet. Climate change is making it easier for it to grow.
Right.
Ooh. Of course it is.
Yeah. Someone gifted me a candle. It was a kudzu flower candle.
Really?
Interesting.
I thought, to me, it was a little too sickly sweet, but it is very sweet smelling. And I imagine that, you know.
Good to know.
I don't know if that's what it smells like in real life. But anyways, it was kind of a cool...
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
This is the last question in this category before the bonus question, and I think we might even stump Michaela for this one.
Oh, shoot.
All
right.
What is the longest living hardwood species in the U.S. that was commonly used for water piping in the early colonial cities?
What?
This is a native tree?
Yes.
I would argue with the answer. Because I think I know what
they are. Michaela is already ready to argue. We haven't even done the answers yet, and she's ready to argue.
I don't know.
Oh, this is a tricky one.
Is it one that would grow here in Maryland?
Yes.
Can I ask for a clarifying question?
I mean, it's like we give y'all a lot of hints in there.
This is a hard one.
Colonial
cities,
where did the colony start?
It is native. It is native.
It's native.
It's a tree.
You want to go first, Michaela?
Sure. I said Quercus, okay, oaks, but I want to argue because bristlecone pine would probably be the oldest, but you said hardwoods, so that's where I'm going to go with oaks.
What is yours?
Okay, I don't have an actual answer for this because I can't think of the name.
Starts with a B.
And has knees. What is that tree?
Cypress.
Bald cypress.
Oh.
There you go. That's my answer. Bald
okay.
cypress.
I can see where you would go with that. Okay.
See, Emily, yeah,
I can see your logic
okay.
there. The answer is black gum. This is Sylvatica.
I would have never guessed that.
So the oldest known individual is currently about 700 years old.
Really?
Various
that
parts.
Should have been her Jeopardy question.
Where is it located? I have to go visit this.
Oh, I don't know. It is an excellent tree for wildlife. Bees and birds love it. Also, various parts of the tree were used by Native American tribes for medicinal and practical purposes. The inner bark was used for making baskets, and the leaves were used as a natural dye.
Love that.
It's beautiful. Love it.
Fall
yes.
colors.
It's the
I
best.
Love black gum.
It's the best color.
I should have known that.
I was about to say redwoods, and I was like, those aren't in this area, so it's not redwoods.
Well, we did throw this one in there for you guys to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
How good of a native plant it is to use in your landscape.
Sure
just
is.
Saying.
Our reaction was natural. We did not manufacture how cool that tree is.
Absolutely. All right, so.
Oh my gosh, are we on to the
bonus
questions?
Okay.
All
right, so let me do the points so you know how much you have to wager here. Rachel has 4 points, Emily has 5 points, and Michaela has 8 points.
Okay.
So decide how much you want to wager, but don't tell anyone, just write it on your board. And then we'll ask you the question. You can't have the category, though. We're not going to give you the category. The category is plants.
Yeah. Oh, they're plants. I'm not wagering anything. I'm just going to stay with her 5 and be happy.
Michaela's very serious about her plants.
I'm trying to be strategic, but I don't know how this is going to go.
Is that
That's
right?
The point. How trivia goes.
Okay.
Nope.
All right, have you decided on your points?
Mm-hmm.
Very serious.
Okay. I'm really nervous. I have anxiety sweat over here.
It's the lights.
It's the lights.
All right, so our final trivia question is, what type of vegetable has varieties named Mirasol, Gypsy, Purple Beauty, Elephant Ear, and Medusa?
Mm. This is purely a guess.
I really.
Purely.
That's great. We love a good guess.
I feel like it should be, if we're going to talk through it, I feel like it should be lettuce, though.
Okay.
Well,
we're about to find out.
All right. Has everyone got an answer?
Oh,
yes.
All right. Let's see it. Who wants to go first?
I wagered nothing and said it's cabbage.
All right.
Good job. I said it was tomato, and then
you
lettuce,
wagered.
And then kale. All of them.
Oh, you wagered all of them.
Go big or
go
home.
Very good, Rachel.
Okay, I wagered 2 points, and
you
I also
cabbage
guessed
too?
Cabbage.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You guys are on the same wavelength.
That is funny. All right, so the answer is actually peppers.
Oh.
I know.
So do we lose points whether we were wrong or right?
I think you lose points, referee.
I mean, in real Jeopardy, you would, but we're
yes,
going
right.
to
okay.
We're gonna be nice.
Okay.
Okay. All right, so no one gains any points, so no one loses, so.
Yes. Yay. So wait, tell us more about the peppers.
Yeah.
We do not have more.
Okay.
Super fun varieties.
I've never heard of any of those.
I kind of feel like whoever named these is all wrong. Because Medusa and elephant ear all sound like a leafy.
Medusa is the only one that I was thinking might give it away. Because
yeah.
I feel like sometimes the really spicy peppers have kind of scary names. And like Medusa
oh,
is
I would
like
think it would be
like
a
ghost
like
pepper.
Right?
Right.
Purple
exactly.
Beauty makes me think of eggplant.
That's what
yeah.
I, yeah, that
actually,
was my other.
We actually grew yeah. Purple Beauty on the research farm, so I
nice.
Actually think
yes.
I was not doing this.
No.
So I was like, we grew that one.
No,
I'm thinking
no.
about that. But I couldn't because we also grew a purple cabbage, which is what I thought.
Yeah,
well, purple
was
like
first
what I thought
broccoli,
was
and then I was like, we grew a purple cabbage though, and I remembered growing something called Purple Beauty. And now that I think back to it, it was a bright purple
pepper. I was thinking the same thing as you, like it had to be some kind of leafy green because of the elephant ear. And I thought
right.
I knew a cabbage named Purple Beauty, but too bad.
All right.
No dice.
We did make that one very tricky on purpose.
That's all right. It's a bonus round.
Well, that's what it's supposed to be.
Exactly.
I knew if you asked a vegetable question, I'd be out.
All All right, so our final standings are Rachel with 4 points.
Yeah.
Emily with 5 points.
Yeah.
And Michaela is our leading points.
Absolutely no stake in the game.
So hopefully listeners did better than we did.
That's right. Yeah.
But hopefully everybody had fun. This was a great way to bring in 2024. So thank
yeah.
you guys
yes.
so
thank
much
you guys
for
so
coming here. You guys want to give us some information about what the Master Gardener program is? I know it's too
sure.
late to sign up for our spring basic training, but for any listeners who are interested in learning more about gardening and potentially volunteering to help teach others about gardening.
Absolutely. Even if you're in another state, you can always look up your local Master Gardener program through your local land grant university or extension service. Of course, we're biased, but you love our Master Gardener program at University of Maryland Extension. We do have a training going on this coming spring in a lot of our counties. We've accepted most of our applications at this point, so you'd be looking to try our fall training. But it's a great classroom training. You learn a lot of things, all things horticulture, all with a sustainable horticulture lens, which is fantastic. And you take that knowledge and use it to serve your community, meet them where they are, and to help them with all different types of gardening that they may be interested in. It does require 20 hours of volunteer service a year and 10 hours of continuing education service. And we have a lot of really fun continuing education events so that everyone can kind of keep up with what's going on in the horticulture industry. There's
mm-hmm.
always something new to learn, even for us.
Mm-hmm.
We love doing it. And for those that might not have time to volunteer 20 hours annually, we also offer a new sustainable horticulture certificate through the university's open learning platform.
Awesome.
Thanks so much, Steph.
So thank you guys so much again for being on the podcast.
Thank
you. And
thank
you for joining us, listeners. We look forward to bringing you guys more information about gardening throughout this year.
Yeah. Thank you, listeners.
Thank you.
Ooh. Happy New Year.
Yeah.
Well, that's all we have for this episode, listener. We hope you'd enjoyed it, and we'll tune in next month for more gardening tips. If you have any garden-related questions, please email us at umegardenpodcast@gmail.com or look us up on Facebook at Garden Time Podcast. That's Garden, THYME. For more information about the University of Maryland Extension and these topics, please check out the University of Maryland Extension Home and Garden Information Center at go.umd.edu/HGIC. Thanks for listening and have fun getting down and dirty in your garden.
Goodbye!
Bye.
The Garden Time Podcast is brought to you by the University of Maryland Extension. Michaela Boley, Senior Agent Associate in Talbot County for Horticulture, Rachel Rhodes, Senior Agent Associate for Horticulture in Queen Anne's County, and Emily Zobel, Senior Agent Associate for Agriculture in Dorchester County.
University programs, activities, and facilities are available to all without regards to race, color, sex, gender identity or expression, sexual orientation, marital status, age, national origin, political affiliation, physical or mental disability, religion, protected veteran status, genetic information, personal appearance, or any other legally protected class.